Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be discussing a number of UK equities as well as the key market themes out there at the moment. And to do that, we have with us Alan Green. Alan, very much welcoming you to the podcast this morning. How are you?
I'm very well, Jonathan. How are you?
Yes, very well. A very interesting and busy week we've actually had in markets. So we're in for a good podcast today. So you've picked out a couple of stocks that we're going to discuss a little bit later on in the podcast. But we're going to cover, first of all, what's happening in markets, Alan. We spoke last week and we were looking at this key level around 7,600, just above on the FTSE 100. It's quite a key level of resistance. If it was broken, we could see a move to the upside. We haven't quite got above that yet. We're seeing strength in Europe and the FTSE is somewhat underperforming today. And I think that's very much down to the ECB, what they did last week and the jitters they caused in European shares, which are now starting to bounce back and outpacing the FTSE 100 there. But sort of looking at what's happening there in the FTSE 100, Alan, when, you know, we spoke about interest rates, and of course we spoke about interest rates in some detail. I mean, but for you looking at markets, I mean, is it just a case that we've seen so far this year, the story is inflation, the story is interest rates. I mean, we're not going to go into the ins and outs of it because we've covered that on the podcast previously. But I mean, do you see that being the narrative in markets going forward?
It certainly seems that way for the short term, John. Yeah, and of course with the with inflation in particular, which is the key concern behind it all, and of course interest rates have been raised to counter that, but that the rise in inflation is really largely due to gas and energy prices. And of course, you know, some people say we're being held ransom by Russia and the East in regard to gas prices. That may well be the case, but you know, it's the bigger companies can manage the process. The bigger companies can work with their customers. But of course, we've seen a raft of smaller energy providers go to the wall, and that's created another set of problems. And of course, we've got a very strong oil price as well. So all of those really are sort of driving inflation. So as the Northern Hemisphere moves into warmer weather, that's going to be less of an issue because there'll be less gas that's used. So, you know, perhaps the prices will moderate. And also, you know, the Ukraine crisis seems to be, I won't say a storm in a teacup, but I think there's a handle on it. I think it's just bluster and puff from Russia, quite frankly, with little else. But of course, you know, we may well find they've invaded this afternoon. But yeah. I don't think that's going to be an issue for the longer term. So I hope we're seeing inflation peaking. So we've seen two interest rate rises now as well. And of course, that means savers that do have cash are going to see a slightly better return on that, which is always good. And as of yet, I don't think that there'll be major problems for people with mortgages in terms of passing the price increases on to borrowers. So as we come out, as we sort of emerge from the winter into warmer weather, I think the FTSE looks quite well placed, and there's certainly a lot of there's a lot of positive energy across global markets, and of course we've got the underlying drivers, the clean technology industry, you know, the clean tech, clean energy. We have the infrastructure budgets in the US that are going to drive the demand for commodities, and many other factors, and of course the EV and the battery industry, that as the automotive industry moves from the internal combustion engine to electric vehicles.
Yes, indeed. It's quite interesting you mentioning there demand for commodities. If you look at the FTSE 100 yesterday, it was dominated the top risers by the mining stocks, because I think there's an expectation that we're going to see, you know, during this period of inflation, commodity prices further increase, and that's going to support the prices of miners. And of course, we had earnings from BP yesterday. They had the highest profits for over a decade. So that's obviously on the higher oil prices. So for the FTSE 100, that looks like it's going to be relatively well supported by the high weighting towards commodity stocks. And I just want to go back to the what you mentioned there about inflation, the cost of living crisis that we're seeing at the moment, because we actually did see some data from the UK, which is particularly interesting in the Halifax house prices this week. So we've seen a record high on house prices. Now, average house price in the UK is some 276,000. But there was a word of caution around this data that, yes, we've got record prices. That's mainly down to a lack of supply in the market. But we have this cost of living crisis coming in now, where, people are seeing higher bills. They're seeing food price inflation, and adding to the mix now, albeit a marginal increase in interest rates, there may be some pressures on mortgage payments going forward. So, there's a bit of a cloud over the outlook of UK house prices. But we've had an instalment from one of the house builders this morning, Alan, in Barratt Developments. That could give a little bit more insight into actually what's happening in the housing market. Started off the day very strong, trading up at about £6.50. But through the morning session on Wednesday, it has sold off quite heavily now and actually gone negative on the day, £6.20. So what's been happening there?
It's an interesting update, actually. Obviously, as you said just now, the housing market has just driven prices. And let's not forget, we've spoken about the likes of Barratt and Taylor Wimpey beforehand, and all of these house building companies were acquiring land banks during COVID. So when prices were low, they were building up these land banks. So they have this huge land bank that they can tap into and just keep building. And you pointed out just now that there is a supply issue for housing. That's always been the case. But of course, the market ebbs and flows. That's the norm. So we're now seeing a pause for reflection. Strong, house price growth, 0.8%. I think it was the Nationwide or Halifax report in January, and of course, house prices being where they are. But there's Barratt's reported net private reservations per active outlets rising by 17%. And of course, we're out of lockdown now, and I think the outlook for this year is a lot better than it was last year. But certainly there's no shortage of first-time buyers coming to Barratt's. But probably, some of this house price data and concerns over inflation weighed on the share price. And as we often see in the markets, it's the old saying, it's better to travel than to arrive. What we're probably seeing is people who've seen or locked in some decent gains on Barratt shares over the year, perhaps certainly in the run from October when shares were trading at 6.35, and of course some may have sold out at the peak in January, which was £7.60. But the run up to the results today, we've seen a topsy-turvy morning in terms of share price performance. I imagine there's going to be some more profit taking in the days to come. But for me, this is just a temporary blip. The underlying macro picture for housing in the UK is still as it always was. And if there are higher interest rates, if inflation does continue, then in order to sustain demand or help sustain demand, the lenders will modify the products they're offering, mortgage products they're offering to first-time buyers, to ensure that they can continue to attract their first-time buyers. But whether that will be at the same rate, of course, or not, we don't know. But certainly, I regard this as little more than a blip, and really, any dip in the share price, in Barratt share price, is probably a good buying opportunity.
Yes, it's interesting to see the moves in Barratt's share price so far this year, trading up at around £7.60 as we started, now down at around £6.20. So I think there's an element there of The market pricing in a softer housing market going forward. But, you know, as you mentioned there, there's a number of measures that lenders can take. And of course, you know, looking at what the Bank of England are doing with interest rates, it's all on a very small scale in terms of, you know, the actual impact on markets. So I think it's, you know, going back to this situation where traders like to trade. And, you know, if you're looking at a particular situation in the economy, people like to trade stocks around that. I think that's what's happening in housing shares so far this year, and of course Barrett's is one of those, so it's going to be interesting to see how they perform for the rest of the year going forward. So Alan, now staying with the FTSE 100, we've had one of the heavyweights report this morning, GlaxoSmithKline. Revenue up 5% in the last year, and they've actually said that they're going to be looking at an increase in profits for the next year of 12 to 14%. But looking at the market reaction, not entirely impressed, off slightly. So what's happening there?
It's a funny old share, Glaxo. I had Glaxo shares some time ago, and they don't seem to have moved too much in the last 10 years, really. But the thing is, it's a steady performer. It's got a dividend yield of just under 5%, and certainly it's a cornerstone of many funds. I mean, the company's worth nearly 82 billion market cap, so it's a huge global entity. But yeah, as you rightly pointed out, I mean, a great set of numbers. Revenues up 5% to 34 billion, just over 34 billion. Double-digit growth in pharmaceuticals and vaccine sales, and of course the underlying profits, which take out the impact of asset sales, actually rose 9% to 8.8 billion. So that's, you know, that's a pretty strong performance. Fourth quarter dividend of 23p a share. So that's 80p dividend total for the year. And of course, the big thing around Glaxo, one of the things that has driven the share price over the past few months, is speculation over the consumer healthcare division, which is now on course to be spun out into a standalone company, and we'll have more news and more detail on that at the end of February. But of course, the price of, or the Glaxo share price, was driven higher due to speculation about Unilever coming in and making a bid, which of course it did. But when Glaxo turned down the Unilever bid, hoped they'd come back with a higher offer. Of course, Unilever didn't. They had a clear value. They saw how it would fit into their business. And of course, Glaxo decided that they could get better value through spinning off as a standalone company. So that's still going ahead. But of course, never say never. We may get an 11th hour offer from Unilever that then improves on that. Or, of course, there may be another potential suitor in the wings too. And that's the great thing when you get some M&A activity like this. It really spices the market up and increases liquidity and volume in these shares. But certainly, Glaxo is an evergreen stock, as I said at the start. I mean, it does seem very much range bound. But, you know, if you pick the shares up at the start of last year at £12, you've been sitting on £16 a share now. So that's a nice gain. And of course, with a 5% dividend yield to boot.
Yes, it's going to be interesting to see how they go forward as a business, because there's going to be some radical shakeups there going forward. And of course, that pipeline of drugs is something to keep a close eye on if they're going to be focusing more and more on their pharmaceutical business. And of course, you know, the dividend there increased slightly, so I don't think it does anything to diminish its standing as a good income share for a portfolio. So, Alan, now let's move on. So we mentioned last week the UK Investor Magazine Metals and Mining Conference, which is coming up on the 22nd of February. We're talking about Cadence Minerals, who will be presenting at that last week. But we're going to touch on now another company in Sovereign Metals that will also be presenting at the UK Investor Magazine Metals and Mining event on the 22nd. So not one I don't think we've discussed on the podcast previously, Alan. They've actually got a very interesting mining process that they're working on. So would you be able to give us a bit more detail into Sovereign Metals, please?
Yes, of course, John. Sovereign Metals are a dual-listed company. So they've been listed on the ASX under the EPIC code SVM for many years, and dual listed on AIM, in fact, on the London market last year. SVML is the Epic code. Shares currently 26p, or just over 26p, have traded as high as 34p. So it gives the company a market cap of around 100 million sterling and about 203 million Aussie dollars. So the company is all about rutile, and it owns the largest undeveloped rutile projects in the world. What's rutile, you ask? Well, rutile is a critical mineral. It's all about titanium. If we look at titanium is available from two source minerals, ilmenite, which contains about 45% titanium oxide. Rutile, on the other hand, contains 95% titanium oxide. So being able to find a rutile resource is crucial for titanium supply. They also have other applications across a range of applications in glass and in gems. But it's really titanium where the real value lies for rutile. So rutile sells for about $2,000 a ton, and there's a great deal of value in it, but. Over the past few years, the global production has come down from about 600,000 to 700,000 tons per year down to about 400,000 to 500,000 tons a year. So there is a supply squeeze. There's a problem, and that's why we have seen the price of rutile rising gradually. So the applications for titanium, of course, are vast. It's a major component in the clean technology and the clean energy industry. For example, offshore wind farms, the pylons and the turbine blades and the mechanisms are coated with titanium, which obviously stops corrosion. It's in a very corrosive environment in the sea. It's also used in aerospace. Of course, titanium is incredibly light. Has a range of applications across the automotive and motorsport industry. But it also is a major component in paint. So if you think about going to your DIY shop and getting cans of brilliant white paint, the brilliant in the white actually comes from the titanium oxide that's in there. So It's a crucial mineral. Currently, over the past year, there are two assets or two rutile assets in Africa. One is Sierra Rutile in Sierra Leone that produced 120,000 tons last year. The other one is in Kwale in Kenya, which is the Kwale asset, which produced 76,000 tons last year. So between them, they produced over 32% of global production. Now, Sorin Metals owns the Cassia asset in Malawi, and this is a huge area. It's bigger than Zone 1 in London. It's absolutely vast, and it's estimated at the moment there are some 644 million tons of just over 1% rutile, which is at the same level as the Sierra Rutile asset in Sierra Leone. Once this the asset of Cassia has undergone a huge scoping study and a lot of detailed work, and this has been really driven by the managing director, Dr. Julian Stevens, who is a geologist in the resources sector, and he spent the last 9 years working in Malawi, working with the community there. Malawi is very much viewed as the warm heart of Africa. But also from an access standpoint, there's very easy access via road and rail from the Cassia project to a deep water port on the coast. But the numbers that have come back from this project are quite incredible. The net present value, or the NPV8, is estimated at $861 million, giving an internal rate of return of 36%. And it's estimated that once the mine is up and running, operating cost per ton mine will be about just under $6 per ton. And that's with 12 million tonnes per year and a 25-year mine life, estimated to deliver 161 million euros a year in EBITDA for the life of the mine. So it's an absolutely enormous project, this. But even more impressive is the fact that this study was undertaken across just over 40% of the entire area. So there is still just under 60% still to explore and to include in the assessment. So it could well be that by the time they're finished, that this project will dwarf any other rutile project currently in production. So when you relate that to a market cap of 108 million, I think you can see that with an NPV of $861 million, the company is modestly valued. If you look at other mining stocks that have smaller assets, particularly in Africa, you'll see a far higher valuation attributed. And I think part of that is down to the fact that there are so few rutile assets around the world that that there isn't probably enough awareness of the importance of rutile as a provider of titanium for the uses I've described. But either way, I mean, this is a very exciting company, and I think it's going to offer some great upside as that project develops during the year. Just want to add in as well, also within the asset is a graphite project, which is the Malagandé graphite project. And again, there's estimated 52 tons per annum of graphite concentrate can be produced from the Malagandé asset. But that's very much on the back burner, given the developments that have taken place with the Cassia asset.
Indeed. I mean, what strikes me about Sovereign Metals is first of all, the uniqueness of the assets in the rutile project they have there. And of course, as you mentioned there, the increasing demand that's about bouncing back for the product. So that does make for quite an exciting project to keep an eye on for investors. And as I mentioned at the beginning, they will be presenting at the UK Investor Magazine Metals and Mining Conference. I'll be talking a little bit more about rutile as well as going into more details of the assets. So do get yourself registered for that on the UK Investor Magazine website. So Alan, now moving on to the final stock that we're going to be discussing today, BATM Advanced Communications. This is a company I don't think we've touched on the podcast previously. We're looking at the share price. It's had quite an exciting year over the last 52 weeks. Would you be able to give us a bit more detail on them and what's their key operations?
Certainly, John. So BATM Advanced Communications, Epicode BVC, the shares are currently trading at 49.5p, having traded as high on the year as 95p. So very much at year lows, which is a mystery. Well, it's not a mystery. I'll come on to that in a second. But what BATM do, they're an Israel-based company. They're a provider of real-time technology for networking and biomedical systems. Now, the biomedical systems entails diagnostic laboratory equipment, which is sold to emerging markets such as China, Russia, and South America. It develops products to treat biological waste in the pharmaceutical industry and agriculture, and is also an investor. The biomedical sector is also an investor and partner into molecular biotechnology projects. In particular, the flagship project is ADOR, which the company owns 37% of, which is developing molecular biology solutions to provide rapid testing for bacterial, viral, fungal infections using DNA and RNA sampling. And it's been used very successfully with COVID testing. It's a rapid test for COVID. And the company announced in December last year it had sold its first COVID-19 tests to Russia. So very much a burgeoning part of the business. So the networking and cyber division provides what's referred to as network function visualization for both wireline, cloud, 5G, and advanced connectivity and networking systems. It provides carrier Ethernet, MPLS access solutions, and cyber network monitoring, which is used by government organizations in Europe and the Asia Pacific region. The company has made good progress over the past few months. If we go back to the interims in August last year, BATM announced it had grown biomedical revenues by 10% to 55 million, driven largely by COVID kit sales, improved its gross margin to 37.5% from 31%. Networking and cyber division revenues fell following the sale of NGSoft, but it realized a capital gain of $13 million from that, and the division still turned over $16.5 million with it. So delivering overall underlying revenue growth of 8%, but the company said at that point it's got a very strong order book and was seeing sustained demands for its diagnostics, and it expects to deliver revenues and EBITDA substantially ahead of market expectations, with growth of over 40% year on year. So we're in the run-up now to those full-year results. So you'd think, well, given the progress to date, that the share price would be certainly pushing year highs. But obviously, we've seen this fall back. And there's a very simple reason for that. The company underwent a FTSE nationality review, and it was decided the FTSE Russell decided to reassign the BATM nationality back to Israel from March 22nd, just after reviewing its both its domicile and its dual listing on the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange. That's had no material effect on the business whatsoever, but it does seem that looking across several of the leading bulletin boards, that a group of people took that as an opportunity to spread some rumours about the company and falsehoods, which engaged some of the people in that group in short selling. So it provided it created some downward pressure on the share price. Totally unfounded, and I think you'll see in the coming weeks that the company is going to it will be reporting to the market, and you know, there's every indication that the financial performance that we've seen already from the biomedical division and the network and cyber division will be continuing on course. Just to say a couple of words about the board, Gideon Chityat is the non-exec chairman. He serves on the board of many industries, and Israel aircraft industries, and is a senior consultant across a number of government departments in Israel, and also he's a professor at Tel Aviv University as well. Zvi Maram is the founder and CEO of the company, a former lieutenant in the Israeli Navy. He's basically driven the company. He's also a director of Shore Capital in the UK. It's UK company listed in Bermuda, in fact. He's been a director at the forefront of BATM, driving the company forward. So, in short, there's, in my opinion, no reason for the share price to be down where it is. So, it has created an opportunity, I think, to pick up a quality stock that's cash generative and fast growing in a number of areas. So there's a very good spread of risk from an investing standpoint, added to which the company also pays a dividend of 1.5%.
Indeed, that's particularly exciting. Just looking at the news flow, as you've highlighted there, you know, that they've got a lot going on there as a company. And yes, you know, obviously the nationality review has probably spooked the market more than anything, but a very good point that you make there, Alan, in this has done nothing to change the underlying fundamentals and operations of the business. So one that maybe investors should have a look at, and, you know, have a look through their recent announcements and what they're actually doing as a company, because that looks particularly interesting. So as a recap of the stocks we discussed today, first up was Barrett Developments with the ticker of BDEV. It was then GlaxoSmithKline with the ticker of GSK. It was then Sovereign Metals with a ticker of SVML. And at the end was BTAM Advanced Communications with a ticker of BVC. Alan, thank you much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, Jonathan.
So just as a note to listeners, as I mentioned, Sovereign Metals will be presenting at the UK Investor Magazine's Metals and Mining Conference coming up on the 22nd of February. Do check out the notes of this podcast and our events section for details of how to sign up for that. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.